Hello, and welcome to our Children's Rights in Action podcast series. Here at Children's Parliament, we believe that children should grow up in a world of love, happiness, and understanding. It's our mission to inspire greater awareness and understanding of the power of children's human rights, and to support the implementation of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, the UNCRC, into Scots law. We're looking forward to sharing this with you through our conversations. Today, we want to take you through one of our favourite Dignity in School activities, myth-busting the UNCRC.
Hello, my name is Jess. I am the Communications and Campaigns Manager here at Children's Parliament. And today I am joined by Jill and Amelia from the Dignity in School programme to talk to us about myth-busting. Jill, would you like to come in?
Yeah, of course. So Dignity in School is this amazing project that's currently across 9 schools in Clackmannanshire and Alloa. It's this amazing opportunity for schools to have a bespoke process that kind of supports them in understanding rights, but also developing a rights-based approach in their setting that works for them.
Yeah, and one of the things that we'd like to talk to you today about is an activity that we actually do in our workshop with the staff in the schools. And this is where we myth bust common misconceptions about what a rights-based approach can mean.
Yeah, and actually one of the ones that always comes up is around the kind of concept of discipline and how that connects to, you know, rights and how that kind of looks in action. And actually, as somebody who was a teacher for many, many years, I completely understand that concern. But obviously, as an organisation, we are quite obviously clear about the benefits of rights and how wonderful rights are. And actually, this concept doesn't always really work, because the reality is that for children to access their rights, they need to be safe, they need to be supported. And actually, that encourages an understanding of self, but also boundaries as well, which schools have been wonderfully kind of participating in, kind of understanding but developing with their children, especially around the concept of dignity. Which I think is really quite powerful. Dignity, for anyone who's kind of like, what's dignity that you're kind of referring to? Dignity is this concept that we're all important and special. And it's actually really powerful, because it helps you not only to understand that you're important and special, but that everyone is important and special. And that there's kind of a collaboration and an affiliation through that process that I think is really, as we've seen in schools and I've seen in my own practice, really quite actually allowing children to acknowledge that, you know, I understand my rights and I know how to action them, but I also understand that I'm part of a bigger process and that I've a connection to others and their rights, although is not respondent or needed, but is a nice kind of connection.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about that with teaching dignity for one person and then realizing everybody else's dignity is that, like, human rights education and the research behind it shows that it grows empathy. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the key concepts as part of dignity, is that understanding everybody else's value as well as your own. And that's really lovely to be a part of and build and teach.
Yeah, it's kind of that celebration of difference and diversity as well. I think comes out really strongly in our initial workshops as well, that kind of concept of, you know, no matter your age, your race, your gender, no matter how you identify, we are kind of supportive of you and whoever you are, which is a really nice collective starting point, I think, for classes. And I think can be for a kind of, and teacher head on is a really powerful starting point, I think, for teachers and adults in schools from the start of a year in particular, like that premise of let's create a space, that ethos from day one. And I think that what always gets me is that the majority of adults that work in schools naturally inhibit a rights-based approach. They care about children, they nurture children, they love children. They just don't use the terminology. And that's absolutely fine, because that's where we kind of come in and we kind of like connect up. But actually, a lot of the best practice that we've seen in schools hasn't necessarily been seen as rights-based approach, but it really is. And so that kind of myth around it having a negative impact, actually, it's the great stuff you already do. It's quite exciting. It's just about giving it a new title, I suppose.
And that's been one of the most fun parts of the jobs, is going in and meeting these like excellent practitioners and telling them that you've already got this, like, just make sure, like, keep going. And that's been a really wonderful part of the process, and then being able to give the right language and all that, it's been very cool.
Yeah, and it also came out, didn't it, a lot in the surveys as well, like what the children were saying was lacking was stuff that was already happening, it was just they were unaware. And so it's that really important kind of moment, is a lot of what we've kind of seen in best rights-based practice is to acknowledge it, but also to kind of celebrate it and to kind of communicate that as a collective, not just between adults or between children, but actually as one whole, which I think is, again, really quite cool.
Sure.
Ah, thanks, Faith. And I suppose I was wondering as well, you know, when I've been out talking to different people about what things looks like or what a rights-based approach looks like, often there's a wee bit of a fear around, you know, children's rights being in competition with other people's rights and what the UNCRC might look like or feel like in practice. If not, competition's the wrong word, but how we get to a space, and I suppose this is where the Dignity in School program comes in, looking at it as a whole school approach to what's rights, how rights are experienced in a school. It's not just rights education, is it? It's what does that look and feel like, but for the whole school community, with yes, children at the center, but what do we need? How do we support the adults, and what does that look like, so that it's almost a community rights-based approach?
Yeah.
I've often called the UNCRC a family document. It's not; it's a community document.
Yeah. I think what's really really powerful actually about Dignity in School is it's school. And I know this is a conversation we've had a lot in the organisation as well. It's not about schools. This is not a one size fits all. This is about, as an individual space, you know, supporting them to kind of understand their setting, understand a rights based approach, to acknowledge what they're doing, and to develop something that works for them. And I think that's a really powerful notion, that actually, you know, our role is a really kind of privileged role actually. Like, we get the opportunity to go in, see great practice, have sometimes challenging conversations, but ultimately support schools to do great things. But they do it. It's not, we're not doing it, they're doing it. And it's actually just, we're kind of, I suppose, in lots of ways a catalyst for that. But I think that in reality, a rights-based approach in that bespoke way is a really powerful tool for schools to actually acknowledge it and also to find what works for them. And ultimately, there is obviously the overarching document and the overarching concepts and themes, but ultimately context needs that specific kind of nature. And I think that that's where Dignity in School comes in really nicely.
I think it's also really exciting. I like what you said, Jess, about it being a community document, because we are going in there and being this catalyst, as Jill said, and starting these conversations. And I think with like building the concept of dignity, realizing the child's dignity or the young person's dignity, and then seeing it everyone else, that includes members of the community of the school. And it's about creating that kind of dynamic of then seeing everybody as the human that they are, and all the rights that they have and the needs that they have. And I think that's really nice to be part of that kind of like community building aspect in that way. And is maybe not like the first thing that you think of, but is actually one of these really nice kind of byproducts of what we do. And it's really, really nice to see the kind of building of community and social change in that. It's very cool.
Thanks, Lee. And so we've looked at statement one of your activity. We've thought about, you know, the possibility that somebody might be concerned about, if we took a children's rights-based approach, does it undermine discipline in any way? What about statement two? So for that one, you've got, there is value in including children's opinions in decision-making in the school. How could we miss that?
So hands up, I've got a lot of bias in this one, because I was a teacher for 11 years. And for me, including children in decision making, and I don't just mean a little bit of choice in a class, I mean in terms of the whole space, the whole school environment around school improvement, ultimately makes a better school. And there's lots of reasons why it makes a better school. First of all, the children are far more engaged and excited. They have ownership, they have agency, which ultimately means that they're less likely to be communicating negatively or perceived negatively within a school setting. So we're actually really proud and excited, and therefore do better in terms of attainment, but ultimately, more importantly, in my opinion, are happier and have a better health and well-being because of that process. I also think, as a teacher, there's a huge benefit. Like, as a teacher, like, workload is crazy. Like, it is crazy, and there's no getting around that. But ultimately, by empowering, that word, but by giving power that they already hold, but allowing those children space to engage with that power, and let them do things that they're excited about and make change in their school, ultimately makes your job easier. Like, it does. They get better, you get better, and actually the whole school environment becomes more representative. And actually a kind of a lovely kind of sharing ethos that I think is a real representation of what children actually require in the real world. So like those real skills, I think through decision making allows them prepared for that reality. So obviously as a teacher, I was very much like for that. And actually from what I've seen so far in the project, the schools are doing that and they're having that impact. And it's not always easy and there's things you have to kind of think about, but ultimately the benefit is, from in my opinion, pretty exceptional actually.
Yeah, I think it's also just really exciting because it's like such an active right in practice, like the right to democracy, and how important that is. And that's something that, again, what you were saying, Jill, is something hopefully that they'll carry with them and realise that that should be in place in other places in society. And then for them to be part of building their own community and realise the power that they have as a group and as an individual is really, really powerful. And hopefully that's something that they take with them.
And gang, thank you, by the way, for answering that in a way when I just realised the activity that you do is agree or disagree. And I stand, so I did not agree with you. I'm like, no, there is no value. So thank you for absolutely proving me wrong, despite the fact that I didn't think you was wrong anyway. So in your last statement of our agree or disagree, the question is, or statement is, children should always be taught about their responsibilities when they learn about their rights. And I know this one comes up very often, and is quite a historic dialogue in terms of thinking about what rights-based practice looks like. And I suppose also perhaps a little bit of a, not a challenge, I keep using that word, but a discussion or a dialogue between rights education and rights experiences.
Yeah, I think this is probably the one that we have the longest conversations on, purely because of what you're saying, like the historic background of it. But so the statement is, children should always be taught about their responsibilities when they learn about rights. And plain and simple, we disagree with that. And there is quite a lot of reasons why. Keep it simple, the first reason is that your rights are always inviolable, universal, unconditional, and can never be taken away from you. They are inherent. So that doesn't mean that you have a responsibility in that situation because they are yours. Nobody can take that away from you. So connecting responsibilities with rights in this context isn't correct. One example would be right to education, and if you're behaving badly, that there would be some consequence of that. That's not the case, because that would be a right and a responsibility, and that right can't be taken away from you. So it's about changing the wording and the dialogue there, because the rights are inherent. There's so much to it.
I think you've summarized the kind of concept of how rights are so important really quite eloquently. It was lovely to listen to, actually. And I think in schools, we understand that children will take on leadership and there potentially is dialogue around responsibilities. However, we would encourage and would kind of state that that's two separate things. You know, a child has rights, full stop. And ultimately, nothing they do will negate that. That's just an existence. And then responsibilities are a separate entity, which we're not discouraging. Of course, children should take on leadership. In fact, we are encouraging that agency, that responsibility in lots of ways, but not in connection with rights. And I think most schools and most practitioners are really on board with that after a conversation and a kind of, I suppose, again, a lot of this is about the language and also, as you kind of noted, the historical perspective. Like, I was one of the teachers who was part of the original rights respecting stuff, where that was exactly how it was framed. It was rights and responsibilities, and that history and that kind of legacy still lives on in school settings, unfortunately. And it is a hard one to kind of get away from, but actually, ultimately, I think as schools and I think children and adults have those conversations about a rights-based approach, it becomes really quite obvious the disconnect between them, which I think is really powerful. And I suppose that's where dignity in school is really in a really nice position, because we talk about dignity as a concept, and I think that encapsulates a lot of that concept in a really kind of simple way. We are important, we are special, each individual is important and special, But also we can think about, as Linnea spoke about really beautifully, that empathy and that connection with others. But ultimately, your rights are your rights, full stop. And I think that that in itself is a really powerful notion that not only the children's schools, but as we can see in the current climate with teachers, you know, obviously looking at strikes and so on, that that is also their right is their right. And so I think it's important that we acknowledge that everyone has rights and everyone's rights are important. And obviously our kind of role specifically looks at children, which is really exciting and lovely.
Yeah, and I think that the one thing that's like evident with this statement is that there is a conversation to be had. It's about language, it's about communication, and about re-establishing what it can mean. Like Jill's been saying, like there obviously has to be a conversation, and that responsibilities aren't categorized with rights.
Thank you ever so much for listening to today's episode. If you'd like to learn more about our work, please visit www.childrensparliament.org.uk.